Part 2, Chapter 29. Aunt Alexander got up and reached for the mantelpiece. Mr. Tate rose, but she declined assistance. For once in his life, Atticus's instinctive courtesy failed him. He sat where he was. Somehow I could think of nothing but Mr. Bob Ewell saying he'd get Atticus if it took him the rest of his life. Mr. Ewell almost got him, and it was the last thing he did. "Are you sure?" Atticus said bleakly. "He's dead, all right," said Mr. Tate. "He's good and dead. He won't hurt these children again." "I didn't mean that." Atticus seemed to be talking in his sleep. His age was beginning to show, his one sign of inner turmoil. The strong line of his jaw melted a little. One became aware of telltale creases forming under his ears. One noticed not his jet-black hair, but the gray patches growing at his temples. "Hadn't we better go in the living room?" Aunt Alexander said at last. "If you don't mind," said Mr. Tate, "I'd rather us stay in here if it won't hurt Jim any. I want to have a look at his injuries while Scout tells us about it." "Is it all right if I leave?" she asked. "I'm just one person too many in here. I'll be in my room if you want me, Atticus." Aunt Alexander went to the door, but she stopped and turned. "Atticus, I had a feeling about this tonight. This is my fault," she began. "I should have..." Mr. Tate held up his hand. "You go ahead, Miss Alexander. I know it's been a shock to you, and don't you fret yourself about anything. Why, if we followed our feelings all the time, we'd be like cats chasing their tails. Miss Scout, see if you can tell us what happened while it's still fresh in your mind. You think you can? Did you see him following you?" I went to Atticus and felt his arms go around me. I buried my head in his lap. "We started home," I said. "Jim, I forgot my shoes. Soon as we started back for him, the lights went out, and Jim said I could get him tomorrow." "Scout, raise up so Mr. Tate can hear you," Atticus said. I crawled into his lap. Then Jim said, "Hush a minute." I thought he was thinking. He always wants you to hush so he can think. Then he said he heard something. We thought it was Cecil. "Cecil?" "Cecil Jacobs. He scared us once tonight, and we thought it was him again. He had on a sheet. They gave a quarter for the best costume. I don't know who won it." "Where were you when you thought it was Cecil?" "Just a little piece from the schoolhouse. I yelled something at him."
"You yelled? What?"
"Cecil Jacobs is a big fat hen, I think. We didn't hear nothing. Then Jim yelled hello or something loud enough to wake the dead."
"Just a minute, Scout," said Mr. Tate.
"Mr. Finch, did you hear them?" Atticus said he didn't. He had the radio on. Aunt Alexander had hers going in the bedroom. He remembered because she told him to turn his down a bit so she could hear hers. Atticus smiled. "I always play a radio too loud." "I wonder if the neighbors heard anything," said Mr. Tate. "I doubt it, heck. Most of them listen to their radios or go to bed with the chickens. Maudie Atkinson may have been up, but I doubt it."
"Go ahead, Scout," Mr. Tate went on.
"Well, after Jim yelled, we walked on, Mr. Tate. I was shut up in my costume, but I could hear it myself then. Footsteps, I mean. They walked when we walked and stopped when we stopped. Jim said he could see me because Mrs. Crenshaw put some kind of shiny paint on my costume. I was a ham."
"How's that?" asked Mr. Tate, startled.
Atticus described my role to Mr. Tate, plus the construction of my garment. "You should have seen her when she came in," he said. "It was crushed to a pulp." Mr. Tate rubbed his chin. I wondered why he had those marks on him. His sleeves were perforated with little holes. There were one or two little puncture marks on his arm to match the holes. "Let me see that thing, if you will, sir." Atticus fetched the remains of my costume. Mr. Tate turned it over and bent it around to get an idea of its former shape. "This thing probably saved her life," he said. "Look." He pointed with a long forefinger. A shiny, clean line stood out on the dull wire. "Bob Ewell meant business," Mr. Tate muttered.
"He was out of his mind," said Atticus.
"Don't like to contradict you, Mr. Finch. Wasn't crazy, mean as hell. Low-down skunk with enough liquor in him to make him brave enough to kill children. He'd never have met you face to face."
Atticus shook his head. "I can't conceive of a man who'd..."
"Mr. Finch, there's just some kind of men you have to shoot before you can say hidey to 'em. Even then, they ain't worth the bullet it takes to shoot 'em. Ewell's one of 'em."
Atticus said, "I thought he got it all out of him the day he threatened me. Even if he hadn't, I thought he'd come after me.
He had guts enough to pester a poor colored woman. He had guts enough to pester Judge Taylor when he thought the house was empty. So do you think he'd have met you face to face in your daylight?"
Mr. Tate sighed. "We'd better get on. Scout, you heard him behind you."
"Yes, sir, when we got under the tree."
"How'd you know you were under the tree? You couldn't see thunder out there."
"I was barefooted, and Jim says the ground's always cooler under a tree."
"We'll have to make him a deputy. Go ahead." Then all of a sudden, something grabbed me and mashed my costume. Think I ducked on the ground. Heard a tussling under the tree, sort of. They were bamming against the trunk, sounded like. Jim found me and started pulling me toward the road. Some Mr. Yule yanked him down, I reckon. They tussled some more, and then there was this funny noise. Jim hollered. I stopped. That was Jim's arm. Anyway, Jim hollered, and I didn't hear him anymore, and the next thing, Mr. Yule was trying to squeeze me to death, I reckon. Then somebody yanked Mr. Yule down. Jim must have got up, I guess. That's all I know. And then? Mr. Tate was looking at me sharply. Somebody was staggering around, panting and coughing fit to die. I thought it was Jim at first, but it didn't sound like him, so I went looking for Jim on the ground. I thought Atticus had come to help us and had got wore out. Who was it? Why, there he is, Mr. Tate. He can tell you his name. As I said it, I half pointed to the man in the corner, but brought my arm down quickly, lest Atticus reprimand me for pointing. It was impolite to point. He was still leaning against the wall. He had been leaning against the wall when I came into the room, his arms folded across his chest. As I pointed, he brought his arms down and pressed the palms of his hands against the wall. They were white hands, sickly white hands that had never seen the sun, so white they stood out garishly against the dull cream wall in the dim light of Jim's room. I looked from his hands to his sand-stained khaki pants. My eyes traveled up his thin frame to his torn denim shirt. His face was as white as his hands, but for a shadow on his jutting chin. His cheeks were thin to hollowness, his mouth was wide, they were shallow, almost delicate indentations at his temple, and his gray eyes were so colorless I thought he was blind. His hair was dead and thin, almost feathery on top of his head. When I pointed to him, his palm slipped slightly, leaving greasy sweat streaks on the wall, and he hooked his thumbs in his belt. A strange smell spasm shook him, as if he heard fingernails scrape slate, but as I gazed at him in wonder, the tension slowly drained from his face. His lips parted with a timid smile, and our neighbor's image blurred with my sudden tears. "Hey, Boo," I said. Chapter 30. "Mr. Arthur, honey," said Atticus, gently correcting me. "Jean Louise, this is Mr. Arthur Radley. I believe he already knows you." If Atticus could blandly introduce me to Boo Radley at a time like this, well, that was Atticus. Boo saw me run instinctively to the bed where Jim was sleeping, for the same shy smile crept across his face. Hot with embarrassment, I tried to cover up by covering Jim up. "Don't touch him," Atticus said. Mr. Heck Tate sat looking intently at Boo through his horn-rimmed glasses. He was about to speak when Dr. Reynolds came down the hall. "Everybody out," he said as he came in the door. "Evening, Arthur. Didn't notice you the first time I was here." Dr. Reynolds' voice was as breezy as a step, and as though he had said it every evening in his life, an announcement that astounded me even more than being in the same room with Boo Radley. Of course, even Boo Radley got sick sometimes, I thought, but on the other hand, I wasn't sure. Dr. Reynolds was carrying a big package wrapped in newspaper. He put it down on Jim's desk and took off his coat. "You're quite satisfied he's alive now?" "Tell you how I knew. When I tried to examine him, he kicked me. Had to put him out good and proper to touch him. So scat," he said to me. Said Atticus, glancing at Boo. "Heck, let's go out on the front porch. There are plenty of chairs out there, and it's still warm enough." I wondered why Atticus was inviting us to the front porch instead of the living room. Then I understood. The living room lights were awfully strong. We filed out, first Mr. Tate. Atticus was waiting at the door for him to go ahead of him. Then he changed his mind and followed Mr. Tate. People have a habit of doing everyday things, even under the oddest conditions. I was no exception. "Come along, Mr. Arthur," I heard myself saying. "You don't know the house real well. I'll just take you to the porch, sir." He looked down at me and nodded. I led him through the hall and past the living room. "Won't you have a seat, Mr. Arthur? This rocking chair is nice and comfortable." My small fantasy about him was alive again. He would be sitting on my porch. Pretty right spell we're having, isn't it, Mr. Arthur? Yes, a right pretty spell. Feeling slightly unreal, I led him to the chair furthest from Atticus and Mr. Tate. It was in deep shadow. Boo would feel more comfortable in the dark. Atticus was sitting in the swing and Mr. Tate was in a chair next to him. The light from the living room window was strong on them. I sat beside Boo. "Well, heck," Atticus was saying. "I guess the thing to do... Good Lord, I'm losing my memory." Atticus pushed up his glasses and pressed his fingers to his eyes. "Jim's not quite 13. No, he's already 13. I can't remember. Anyway, it'll come before county court." "What will, Mr. Finch?" Mr. Tate uncrossed his legs and leaned forward. "Of course, it was clear-cut self-defense, but I'll have to go to the office and hunt up..." "Mr. Finch, Do you think Jim killed Bob Ewell? Do you think that?
You heard what Scout said. There's no doubt about it. She said Jim got up and yanked him off her. He probably got a hold of Ewell's knife somehow in the dark, and we'll find out tomorrow.
Mr. Finch, hold on, said Mr. Tate. Jim never stabbed Bob Ewell.
Atticus was silent for a moment. He looked at Mr. Tate as if he appreciated what he said, but Atticus shook his head.
Heck, it's mighty kind of you, and I know you're doing it from that good heart of yours, but don't start anything like that.
Mr. Tate got up and went to the edge of the porch. He spat into the shrubbery, then thrust his hands into his hip pockets and faced Atticus.
Like what? He said.
I'm sorry if I spoke sharply, Heck, Atticus said simply, but nobody's hushing this up. I don't live that way.
Nobody's going to hush anything up, Mr. Finch.
Mr. Tate's voice was quiet, but his boots were planted so solidly on the porch floorboards it seemed that they grew there. A curious contest, the nature of which eluded me, was developing between my father and the sheriff. It was Atticus's turn to get up and go over to the edge of the porch. He said, "Hmm," and spat dryly into the yard. He put his hands in his pocket and faced Mr. Tate.
Heck, you haven't said it, but I know what you're thinking. Thank you for it, Jean Louise.
He turned to me. You said Jim yanked Mr. Ewell off you?
Yes, sir, that's what I thought.
See there, Heck? Thank you from the bottom of my heart, but I don't want my boy starting out with something like this over his head. Best way to clear the air is to have it all out in the open. Let the county come and bring sandwiches. I don't want him growing up with a whisper about him. I don't want anybody saying, Jim Finch, his daddy paid a mint to get him out of that. Sooner we get this over with, the better.
Mr. Finch, Mr. Tate said stolidly. Bob Ewell fell on his knife. He killed himself.
Atticus walked to the corner of the porch. He looked at the wisteria vine. In his own way, I thought, each was as stubborn as the other. I wondered who would give in first. Atticus's stubbornness was quiet and rarely evident, but in some ways he was as set as the Cunninghams. Mr. Tate's was unschooled and blunt, but it was equal to my father's.
Heck, Atticus' back was turned. If this thing's hushed up, it'll be a simple denial to Jim of the way I've tried to raise him. Sometimes I think I'm a total failure as a parent, but I'm all they've got. Before Jim looks at anyone else, he looks at me, and I've tried to live so I can look squarely back at him. If I've connived at something like this, frankly, I couldn't meet his eye, and the day I can't do that, I'll know I've lost him. I don't want to lose him and Scout, because they're all I've got.
Mr. Finch!
Mr. Tate was still planted to the floorboards. Bob Ewell fell on his knife. I can prove it.
Atticus wheeled around, his hands dug in his pocket. Heck, can't you even try to see it my way? You've got children of your own, but I'm older than you. When mine are grown, I'll be an old man, if I'm still around. But right now, if they don't trust me, they won't trust anybody. Jim and Scout know what happened. If they hear of me saying downtown something different happened, heck, I won't have them anymore. I can't live one way in town and another way in my home.
Mr. Tate rocked on his heels and said patiently, He'd flung Jim down. He stumbled over a root under that tree, and look, I can show you.
Mr. Tate reached in his side pocket and withdrew a long switchblade knife. As he did so, Mr. Reynolds came to the door.
The son, deceased under that tree, doctor, just inside the schoolyard. Got a flashlight?
Better have this one.
I can ease around and turn my car lights on, said Dr. Reynolds, but he took Mr. Tate's flashlight.
Jim's all right. He won't wake up tonight, I hope, so don't worry.
That the knife that killed him, Heck?
No, sir, still in him.
Looked like a kitchen knife from the handle. Ken ought to be there with a hearse by now, doctor. Night.
Mr. Tate flicked open the knife. It was like this, he said. He held the knife and pretended to stumble as he leaned forward. His left arm went down in front of him. See there? Stabbed himself through the soft stuff between his ribs. His whole weight drove it in.
Mr. Tate closed the knife and jammed it back in his pocket.
Scout is 8 years old, he said. She was too scared to know exactly what went on.
You'd be surprised, Atticus said grimly.
I'm not saying she made it up. I'm saying she was too scared to know exactly what happened. It was mighty dark out there, black as ink. It takes somebody mighty used to the dark to make a competent witness.
I won't have it, Atticus said softly.
God damn it, I'm not thinking of Jim.
Mr. Tate's boot hit the floorboard so hard the lights in Miss Maudie's bedroom went on. Miss Stephanie Crawford's lights went on. Atticus and Mr. Tate looked across the street, then at each other. They waited.
When Mr. Tate spoke again, his voice was barely audible.
Mr. Finch, I hate to fight you when you're like this. You've been under a strain tonight no man should ever have to go through. Why you ain't in the bed from it, if I don't know, but I do know that for once you haven't been able to put two and two together, and we've got to settle this tonight, because tomorrow it'll be too late. Bob Yule's got a kitchen knife in his crawl." Mr. Tate added that Atticus wasn't going to stand there and maintain that any boy Jim-sized with a busted arm had fight enough left in him to tackle and kill a grown man in pitch dark. "Heck," said Atticus sharply, "that was a switchblade you were waving. Where'd you get it?"
"Took it off a drunk man," Mr. Tate answered coolly.
"I was trying to remember. Mr. Yule was on me, then he went down. Jim must have gotten up, at least I thought. Heck?"
"I said I took it off a drunk man downtown tonight. Yule probably found that kitchen knife in the dump somewhere, honed it down, and bided his time. Just bided his time."
Atticus made his way to the swing and sat down. His hands dangled limply between his knees. He was looking at the floor. He had moved with the same slowness that night in front of the jail, when I thought it took him forever to fold his newspaper and toss it in his chair. Mr. Tate clumped softly around the porch. "It ain't your decision, Mr. Finch. It's all mine. It's my decision and my responsibility. For once, if you don't see it my way, there's not much you can do about it. If you want to try, I can call you a liar to your face. Your boy never stabbed Bob Yule," he said slowly. "Didn't come near a mile of it, and now you know it. All he wanted to do was get him and his sister safely home." Mr. Tate stopped pacing. He stopped in front of Atticus, and his back was to us. "I'm not a very good man, sir, but I am sheriff of Macomb County. Lived in this town all my life, and I'm going on 43 years old. Know everything that's happened here since before I was born. There's a black boy dead for no reason, and the man responsible for it's dead. Let the dead bury the dead this time, Mr. Finch. Let the dead bury the dead." Mr. Tate went to the swing and picked up his hat. It was lying beside Atticus. Mr. Tate pushed back his hair and put his hat on. "I never heard tell that it's against the law for a citizen to do his utmost to prevent a crime from being committed, which is exactly what he did. But maybe you'll say it's my duty to tell the town all about it and not hush it up. Know what happened then? All the ladies in Macomb, including my wife, would be knocking on his door bringing angel food cakes. To my way of thinking, Mr. Finch, taking the one man who's done you in this town a great service and dragging him with his shy ways into the limelight, to me, that's a sin. It's a sin, and I'm not about to have it on my head. If it was any other man, it'd be different, but not this man, Mr. Finch." Mr. Tate was trying to dig a hole in the floor with the toe of his boot. He pulled his nose, then he massaged his left arm. "I may not be much, Mr. Finch, but I'm still sheriff of Macomb County, and Bob Yule fell on his knife. Good night, sir." Mr. Tate stamped off the porch and strode across the front yard. His car door slammed, and he drove away. Atticus sat looking at the floor for a long time. Finally, he raised his head. "Scout," he said, "Mr. Yule fell on his knife. Can you possibly understand?" Atticus looked like he needed cheering up. I ran to him and hugged him and kissed him with all my might. "Yes, sir, I understand," I reassured him. "Mr. Tate was right." Atticus disengaged himself and looked at me. "What do you mean?" "Well, it'd be sort of like shooting a mockingbird, wouldn't it?" Atticus put his face in my hair and rubbed it. When he got up and walked across the porch into the shadows, his youthful step had returned. Before he went inside the house, he stopped in front of Boo Radley. "Thank you for my children, Arthur," he said.
Thanks for listening to these chapters. Be sure and hit that red subscribe button below or click on my picture up above to subscribe to my channel so that I can make more of these audiobooks.